So yeah, thanks for inviting me, and thanks for the introduction.
Okay.
So yeah, I want to talk today a bit about conversations. What are they, and how this very central human interaction can be used and can be relevant to animal communication, if at all. So to start with a very general definition, I'm not sure where I got it from, maybe even Wikipedia. So conversation is interactive communication between two or more people. Quite intuitive, but in human culture, it's considered to be a bit more than just informational exchange. It's a lot about the interaction between the parties. And if we think about it, when we meet with a friend and they tell us about their day or their work, do we really need that information? Do we really remember what we talked about a few months ago or a year ago? But we do remember that we met this person, we had some, we sat with him, we talked with him about something. We kind of touched base, but the information in most cases kind of getting lost with time. So I guess in this context of casual conversations, the interaction is larger than the actual content of the things that we talked about. And when looking at some papers about what people are actually converse about, it seems that in most cases, just general social stuff about ourselves, about other people, kind of a bit gossipy without a lot of functional things that we might consider communication being all about. And the suggestion was that those interactions, those conversational meetings that we have, are generally about servicing social relationships, about ensuring the smooth running of a social group, maybe a bit of self-promotion, depending on the culture. But the information we exchange is not as crucial as we think. Now, a few criteria were suggested to kind of define more formally what is the conversation type interaction. So first of all is reciprocal turns or turn-taking. Participants are avoiding overlap. We're trying to anticipate when the next person is about to finish his turn and kind of prepare ourselves in order to fit in this gap and avoid awkward pauses, but also avoid talking together with the other participants. The interaction is more or less between defined parties, as in contrast to kind of a more general announcement or speeches that are going away to as many people as possible. When we converse, we address specific person or specific group of individuals. Continuity is also an important aspect, and there are several exchange turns that are going on, and we actually invest a lot of effort in making this conversation going, in making this interaction going. We can add detail, we can exaggerate, we do expect the other parties to respond and to contribute to have this thing not being just a question and answer, something very, very limited in time. And the last one is the progression within a sequence. So there is a sort of a direction. I mean, it's not just repetition. We respond to the previous signal, and then it's progressing in that matter. And so the signals are changing dependent on the ones that have been said before. And so as conversations were suggested to be the very essence of human communication, there were a few attempts to try and see if they can be traced back, that social interaction, can it be traced back to animal ancestry? And a lot of push forward was done following some of Robin Dunbar's works that, among other things, talked about animal vocal exchanges being sort of an equivalent of physical grooming. And now, besides the hygienic function of grooming, of removing parasites, it also has a social function of kind of maintaining social bonds within a group. And Robin Dunbar suggested that vocal exchanges have a very similar function, but allow bonding with more individuals. And this basically made the parallel to the social functions of our own conversations. Now, of course, there is no animal equivalent to the complexity and the hierarchical structure of human language. But if it's mainly about interaction and mainly about bonding, maybe a much simpler signal would still work. Now, the social function of vocal exchanges in animals have been shown in a few species. These are just three kind of random examples, but in all the papers that I found, turn-taking and partner selectivity, according to some social parameter, was always present. There were less attempts to try and tick the boxes of continuity and progression within a sequence. They might be less important. I don't know. My personal feeling that at least continuity and persistence should play a major role. I mean, we do see that persistence of signaling is important for mating-related bonds, or establishing mating-related bonds. So I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be the case with general social bonds as well. But there are a few challenges for generating this vocal exchange interactions. First is signal coordination. How do we know where the other party is about to finish their turn? How do we know when they're about to start their turn? And again, if we're looking at humans, we are paying attention to a series of quite subtle cues from other people. We're looking at body posture, we're looking at intonation, we're looking at breathing, and subconsciously anticipate when it will be an opportunity for us to get into that gap. But it is unclear on what level this is regulated in animals. Another issue is partner recognition. What is my preference? Who I interact with? The individuals that I have stronger bonds with, or individuals that I have weaker bonds with? Where is the balance, and what is the benefit of maintaining an existing friendship, or kind of trying to establish a weaker one? And a third question is the famous cocktail party problem. And it's basically, if we have a bunch of people in a room and everyone is speaking, how do we manage to maintain this communication and link with a specific partner? Do we only manage to do it in a kind of spatially proximate niche? Or can we kind of generate sort of a code that will allow us to secure a channel that we'll be able to communicate with somebody who is slightly further away? But this code will make those signals of this specific partner more recognizable. It will make them stand out from the general noise that we're hearing. So I'm looking at some of those questions in animals, not in humans. And as a starting point, we need to find those vocal exchanges, those events when we have a calling group, and from the first look which looks like most of the individuals are making calls, but we can distinguish between two cases. A case where they're all just calling as a result of some external event, and their calls are not directly dependent on one another, and a situation when this group vocal signature is actually consisting of local interactions of individuals communicating between themselves, but from kind of a general overview, it's hard to distinguish between those two states. So this work is done together with Mara Batiste, Marta Manser from Zurich, and Ari, and with a lot of help of people that assisted in the field, Beck, Pauline, Chini, and Walter from the Kalahari Meerkat project. Now, the main study system that we work with are meerkats. And meerkats are a great model for communication and sociality studies. They're very social. They have a very large and nicely defined vocal repertoire. These are just a few examples of the calls that they make. Basically, most of their daily activity is accompanied by some sort of vocal signal. And the groups stay together most of the time. There are some group splits. There are some individuals going roving here and there. But really, most of the day, the group is staying in a very defined areas. Now, this is a wild population from the Kalahari Meerkat project in South Africa. This is a population that's been monitored for the last 20 years. Individuals are marked, their life histories are known, and they're very well habituated to the level that we can approach them and collar most of the individuals in the group without trapping, without immobilizing them in any way. If we are slow and careful enough, we can just approach and kind of gently snap the collar on the group, most of the individuals. So this collar is including a GPS, collecting data at 1 hertz, and an audio recorder that records continuously. The data collection window is defined, so it will record for 3 hours during the foraging period of the group, and those 3 hours can be in the morning or in the afternoon, but 3 hours each day over a course of a week or so. And so at the end, the output of the data is that we have the movement trajectories of all individuals and the calls of individually identified calls from each one of the meerkats. And it's all aligned on the same timeline. We know which individual produced the call at what point in time and in what point in space. Now, from all the different meerkat call types, I want to focus on two for today, close calls and short note calls. These are the most frequent call types in our data set. They're about 80% of the data. Now, close calls are individually distinctive. They're mostly produced while the group is foraging. And in a foraging meerkat group, individuals are known to kind of follow the hotspot of the close calls. The denser area from where the calls are made. And the function is thought to be kind of to avoid separation, to keep the group together. Interestingly, when there are pups in the group, the close call rates are going down. Now, meerkat pups are incredibly noisy. They make begging calls all the time, creating a lot of background for the group. And it might be that this kind of constant acoustic jamming prevents this closed call system from functioning. Individuals can hear others, they don't produce the calls themselves, and so the pups are kind of disturbing this whole acoustic location system. So the social monitoring of other individuals in the group and the sensitivity to interference may make close calls a good candidate for a bidirectional exchange. If it's dependent on call and response dynamics, it might not function if there are a lot of noise in the area. And this is how it looks in real life. The next call type is the short note. Short notes are also individually distinctive, but they have a much higher variety in the context of their production. We can hear short notes when there is an individual going on sentinel duty, when there is a submission interaction between meerkats. We hear a lot of short note calls when meerkats are sunning, when they emerge from the burrow and kind of stand and warm in the sun before they start foraging. They all emit those short note calls. They also emit them when the group is running, really during fast movement. And in all those contexts, the acoustic structure is quite similar. We cannot really distinguish between short notes from different contexts without having some additional information. Just by looking at the spectrograms and hearing the calls, they look and sound exactly the same. Another interesting detail about short note calls in the past, Ari and I looked at sunning short note calls, and we showed that they do not overlap. The time point zero here on the plot showing low levels of overlap between different individuals. When we took the times of calls of one individual and artificially shifted them back and forth, we've seen that the overlap rates are spiking up, and that's the curve on the left or on the right. So they do seem to be actually avoiding calling together with other meerkats at the same time, and tend to turn take during the sunning interaction, during the sunning behavior. And again, this is the sunning. They stand, they warm in the sun for about 40 minutes, an hour, before they start their daily activity. Now let's look at short notes at a foraging context. The same call, different behavior context. And this is a slightly different analysis, but what this plot is showing us is calls of neighbors at a 2 meter radius. So we take a time of an individual call here at time zero and look at the call rates of neighbors before and after. And basically that peak at time zero telling us that they call more or less simultaneously. They overlap, and we don't see those interactions that we've seen in the sunning context anymore. When we open this radius a bit and look at increase the distance, we see that the peak is still here until more or less 5 meters, and further than that, there is no pattern. We don't see any calling that is dependent on the focal one beyond that 5 meter range. And so there is some local behavior context, but we don't see any individual interactions going on there. And now exactly the same analysis, but now with the close calls. And here the situation is completely different. We see the two peaks on more or less 0.3 seconds from the focal call. So after the focal is calling, there is a high probability that a neighbor will call in 0.3 seconds after. So now we do see that call and response dynamics. But again, the spatial range is still about 5 meters. So that might be the distance that is perceived as socially relevant for a meerkat, at least in this context. Now, just again to make a clear comparison, both those plots together, we have the short notes with the overlapping calling and the close calls and the close calls with the call and response patterns. And the 5 meters is similar for both. So we're likely seeing two different signaling modes here. Sort of broadcast signaling with the group is calling generally to a contextual event, and an interactive or conversational dynamics of individuals kind of communicating directly or with their neighbors or with other individuals specifically. And interestingly, the same call type can function in both signaling modes. So if you're looking at short note calls, the same calls acoustically, but given at a different coordination levels in those two situations. I mean, we still need to wrap the short note call analysis together in a similar plots, but those two pieces of the puzzle seem to kind of fit together, and showing that short note calls are part of conversational type interactions. And functionally, in the sunning contest, we do think that they are fulfilling that criteria of being kind of a bonding interaction. To test this, we performed a series of playback experiments when we played calls of group members to individual meerkats in the field, and we're now analyzing their responses. Now, this is something preliminary. There's more data that needs to go into this plot. But what basically we're seeing that call rate on the y-axis is higher for individuals with weaker social ties on the x-axis. And it was kind of counterintuitive for me because I expected the opposite. I expected that strongly bonded individuals will have more intense interactions. But just a few weeks ago, a practically identical result was showed in dolphins with weakly bonded individuals showing stronger intensity of vocal exchanges. And the explanation for this might be that there is a reason to invest more in the weaker ties. I mean, meerkats can hardly be called egalitarian, but they have quite a steep hierarchy with dominant and pair and subordinate individuals. But generally, there are few examples that more equal distribution of social ties is promoting longer life expectancy and better distribution of resources. So that might be the driver behind this preference for communicating with individuals that I'm less friends with, to kind of equalize my social niche. One more thing that we want to do, hopefully this summer, is to see if the selection of the interaction partner can be proactive. I mean, for now, we only looked at meerkats that are already standing one by the other, or by playing a playback from very close proximity, but can they actively change their position and go and exchange calls with someone they kind of need to improve their relationship with? And an alternative option would be that they're just kind of randomly shifting partners, maximizing the number of different interactions. But I mean, the nature of each specific call exchange could be different depending on the kind of relative benefit of interacting with this specific group member. Now, another topic that I want to talk about, and this is dealing with cues indicating the intention to produce a call. Basically touching the idea of how to coordinate between individuals and avoid this overlapping the calls of others, kind of to smooth the interaction. And now this part is done with the collaboration with Marta Manser from Zurich and Glenn Tarasal. And so just a bit of a background, most mammals produce calls on the exhale. So in order to call, we need to first inhale, and then air is pushed from the lungs, powering the vocal folds and generating the sound. And usually we need slightly deeper inhale to talk. How much deeper? Well, in humans, it often depends on the length, on the duration of the things that we want to say. We usually try and inhale enough air to finish a sentence or at least stop at some logical point for to take the next breath. And those changes in breathing are actually detectable by others. And sometimes we can identify a person preparing to say something by the depth of the breathing that that person is taking. Now, we thought about taking this physiological process and trying to see if those breathing cues can also function in animals to regulate their interactions. And even more interestingly would be to see if we can identify failed calling attempts. There was an intention to call, but something got in the way, and this call never happened. And so the first part of this project was very recently published. What we were trying to do is look for a relatively easy and non-invasive way to monitor breathing. We did not want to put complex logger harnesses or implant respiration loggers into the animals. We wanted to do something external. And thermal imaging looked promising for that. And the principle is that the temperature of the nostril is changing during breathing. We inhale cooler air, we exhale warmer air from the lungs, and those differences can be detected by the thermal camera, and the breathing curve can be kind of approximated from these temperature changes. So Glenn, the collaborator from Brock Uni in Canada, and I, we spent a few weeks in the field filming meerkats with a thermal cam and recording their sunning calls. And now there are a few technical limitations to this method. So first of all, the ambient temperature has to be relatively low. If the air temperature and the temperature of the animal are more or less the same, it will be very hard to get the differences in temperature between the inhale and the exhale. And the other issue is that thermal cameras, for some reason, do not record sound. So we had to record sound separately and sync the audio and the thermal feed using this very elaborate method of flipping a lighter and getting the click and the heat signature on the camera. But, well, it worked. We collected videos, we tracked the nostrils of the meerkat using a loopy pose estimation tool, and measured the pixel density in the area of interest, converted this into temperature, And when combining everything together, we're getting the respiration curve of an animal here on the bottom, and the audio, the calls, that we, the waveform here on the left. So when temperature is going down, that's an inhale. When temperature is going up, that's an exhale. And it's, you see, the breathing is more or less stable. And just before the call, there's a bigger dip and a higher higher peak. And the recovery after a call is also shorter. So again, those arrows here are the points when calls were produced. You see, larger inhale before producing a call, higher pressure of pushing the air out when calling, and this results in faster and shorter recovery until the next breathing cycle. And just want to say thank you to Carla for getting the for giving me the idea of combining this in one-on-one video. So respiration irregularities are starting before active call time emission. There is a small time window, but it might be useful for identifying those preparations, those intentions to produce a call. And now these calls are quite short and quite not so loud. Maybe with longer call sequences or louder calls, we'll see a much bigger change. But even with the faint meerkat calls, we see that the normal respiration cannot accommodate this this need for a higher pressure for powering the vocal cords. And another interesting result that we got from this data is that when neighbors are calling, the breathing of focal individual is getting slower. And I don't have a definite explanation of why this is happening. There are two options that for now we thought about it. First of all, it could be attention. There is a possibility that the animal is kind of trying to reduce the internal noise to improve the perception of the auditory signal that is coming in. Another option is relating to the function of the proposed function of this of the sounding calls. At least this is the appeasing effect. If there is some relaxation during this call interaction, hearing calls of others might cause this slowdown of breathing, but again, we yet don't know how to show that exactly. Now, the plan for next step is to record pairs of animals with the tracking of the respiration, and now actually see if first this is can be used as a cue if preparations to call in a neighbor will kind of suppress the calls of the other individual. And another idea is, again, to detect those failed calling attempts by looking at breathing and then associating what have caused this individual to change this mind, to change its mind. Why this meerkat, having full intentions to produce a call, didn't do it in the end. I mean, it would be cool to see what level of regulation they have for avoiding overlap and basically for having this whole interaction going in an orderly manner. Now, before summing up, I want to talk a bit about continuity. So if we go back to physical grooming, grooming is a slow process. Now, I have only very basic knowledge about the hormonal regulation in the neural processes that are acting in eliciting this feeling of pleasure and attachment following the tactile stimulation of grooming. But from what I managed to read, it takes time. It takes time until the effect accumulates, and also the grooming needs to be done in a certain pace to have it to be more efficient and initiate those effects. And this is actually one suggested limitation for physical grooming. It's time costly. If you have a larger group, you need to invest a specific amount of time for each individual. You cannot just cover everybody. You eventually have to do other things. And so acoustic interactions with the same grooming function can solve some of these difficulties, but it might require continuity as well, again, to elicitate those hormonal and neural processes. So we did not test this with our data, but there are several options for maintaining this link of communication with specific partners over longer time scales, again, within a group. And the options are changing the acoustics of the signal or changing the syntax, maybe changing the rhythm for generating this kind of channel, this specific code for continuing the conversation despite being slightly away and having other individuals calling in the surroundings. But again, just an idea for now. So, well, going back to the slide that the title slide of animal conversations, when, what, and who, I kind of anticipate the question of, well, why? I mean, why there's a need to make this parallel? There are vocal interactions. Some of them have similar properties, but there's probably a huge variation in depending on the environment, on the modality. I mean, I'm clearly biased towards the acoustic signaling, but it can be any other type of signal. It can be gestural, it can be olfactory. But this is actually the reason why I think this is a useful framework, because it's less about the complexity of the information, less about the channel of the how the information is transferred, and more about the interaction and the dynamics of the timeline of the interaction. And another aspect is that those conversation type interactions, they require at least some level of intentionality. And this is a debatable topic, at least in animal communication still. It is not fully established how intentional are, how aware the animals for that they transmit information, or they receive information. But persistence and kind of the flexibility for adjustment that is needed for kind of keeping this interaction going, I think it requires some attention. It requires some awareness of the state of the receiver. And if we look at enough detail at those interactions, we can better define those capabilities in animals. So yeah, that's all. I don't know how much I'm in time. Just thank you for listening, and all the different funders and organizations.
Yeah, so I thanks for the great talk. I was wondering about the individual identifiability of the call. You said they're individually distinct.
Yeah.
So could that be like constantly calling your name kind of to inform others about your positioning, or how would you conceptualize it? Or could you also address specific others, and could you find this out via their interaction? So basically, if I call your name, mm-hmm. that you would approach me or direct your attention towards me. Is there any sign of that? And
So we don't know about that in meerkat specifically. There are some evidence in bats, if I'm not mistaken, and I think in dolphins, that they do have some type of call that it is kind of identifying myself. So it is an option. I think that short notes would be a better candidate for that. As I mean, they are quite simple in terms of their acoustics, and I'm not sure how much we never know how information is actually encoded in those calls, but it seems that they have much more capacity for transmitting the identity than any other like motivational information. But yeah, but I mean, the short answer is I don't know.
Are you considering to find this out via the interaction? So you do have the GPS data,
yeah,
and you have the call data, so you could basically see via the reaction of the individuals?
So they do respond differently to calls of different individuals. Mm-hmm. So I think it's safe to assume to say that they recognize who is that individual. It can be enough. You don't have to say your name if I identify your voice, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So that can function on the same level. But it would be the thing that we're trying to do this summer is to see if they will actively go and approach this individual, but that will be harder to see if they just hear it. Or do you see it and then they go and interact with it?
So basically you expect the timeline, I call and then you approach me? Or
maybe, yes. Yeah. Either you call and they approach you, or you don't call but then I approach you because I see you. I guess that would be the test then, what goes first.
And so I was wondering if already with your data, you already have available, if you already can see some temporal pattern between who is is there always the same, like if you have a pair A and B,
yeah,
if it's always A starting and B responding, or if it's always if you could have things like that.
Yes, so there are definitely individual tendencies. I don't have these plots here, but when we're kind of looking at those pairs, we see that some individuals are kind of more of a follower. They mostly respond to others, and some are more balanced, and some are just initiate the interactions. We couldn't figure out if there's something with the social status or the sex. It might be something very personal. It is not related to one of the kind of characteristic that we try to look at. But yes, it's a thing. I don't have a good explanation of why exactly.
Okay, but you already see a pattern.
Sorry?
You already see a pattern.
Yeah, we see a pattern, we can't explain it.
Thanks for the presentation. My question is quite similar, but I was wondering if all meerkats use the same calls, or if there are some specific calls for younger meerkats or for older, do they have to learn these calls mm-hmm. first and see them when to use them afterwards?
Yeah, so I personally didn't look at call ontogeny specifically. I know there's some work being done on that in Zurich. So I can't say about the close calls that they definitely change with age, and they kind of become more defined. And when they're younger, they much more variable, and they vary in length, slightly vary in frequency, getting a bit weird. But when they're getting to like year and a half, 2 years, they're already much more stereotyped. About short notes, I don't know, because we only recorded adults. But I mean, I hope that the work that they're doing in Zurich will kind of give us a better answer for that.
Thank you so much. We have a question from the chat
by
Janine Gruta. Hello, Janine. Thank you so much. She writes, thank you very much for your talk. You talked about the tendency to signal more to weaker ties, which may be related to group functioning and fairness. Do you know whether this depends on the position of the animal in the group? For example, do the lower ones in the hierarchy send more signals, maybe to bond more with the group?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I think it was, from what I remember, I did this analysis a while ago. If I remember correctly, then it was mainly about kind of paired relationship, not about any kind of global rank of the individual. I think that's the case. I might need to double check it, but I'm almost sure that was that. It was individual and not group level.
Thank you. Janine, I hope that answers your question. If not, you can, of course, write another line here. Also, if there are any more questions in the chat. Yes, she says, okay, thanks. Then there's a question by Nico Gradwohl. Thank you so much for the exciting talk. Related to the signaling to weaker ties, how would you think in which instances or by which processes this is related to group functioning and fairness?
Oops. So I can't say about meerkats specifically. I did encounter similar results in the previous system that I worked with rock hyraxes, and their groups with more equal tie distribution, individuals had longer life expectancy. And some of the suggestions that were made that there's less conflict, there's better distribution of resources, food resources, and I guess just less stress, that might be the reason. And I think it's, again, it's reasonable to say that it might be similar in meerkats, but we haven't tested this directly.
Thank you. Great, thanks. Are there any other questions? Christoph?
Thanks. So I may be totally wrong because I'm not an expert, but so it's more for the why question.
Yeah.
I think in the evolution of human language, there are some theories that postulate that the origin is gestural rather than vocal at the origin. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, maybe it will be also so more vocal, and maybe because they are like meerkats, when they forage, they are engaged with all their limbs on the ground. So maybe that's why it's in this case, it's more the vocal. It's just an idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's that's the explanation what we're also thinking about. They're just don't need to lift their head, and it's a much convenient channel for doing that.
So there's another comment from Eli Strauss.
Yeah.
Very nice talk. I'm curious about the relationship between complexity, brackets operationalized as variability in call structure within types, and overlap turn-taking. It seems that when all calls are communicating the same information and thus are very similar in structure, e.g. predator, overlap occurs and amplifies the signal. But in these sunning calls, where calls are also very similar, there is very little overlap. Do you think it's possible to make some broad predictions about the relationship between call overlap and call complexity?
I think that at least if we're looking at sunning calls and the same short note calls that are produced during foraging, they're the same call. And in one case, they're overlapping. In another case, they don't. So I think that's an example. It is not necessarily this. I think it's, I'm not sure how to answer that kind of on the fly. I think the kind of call complexity question is also a bit tricky definition. Because if we're looking at a call as a unit or at a call as a sequence that transmits the information, I think it's really hard to distinguish which one is more complex and which one is less complex. But I think maybe Elon and I can have a talk in the office later and we can explain a bit better.
He says, thanks, that's a great point. Are there any other questions or comments? I'll just wait a minute for the chat community to think it over. But doesn't seem there are any more questions. So thank you, Vlad, again, very, very much. This was very exciting. And you deserve your
thank you.
The praise and the claps.